Welcome to Comics,
episode 226. This week, we talk about
Dr. Fate, Countdown to Mystery.
Visit us at welcometocomics.com. Listen to past episodes, see what we're reading next, send us a message, or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. This episode is supported by listeners like you. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics. And now, buy a Gundam to put together?
I am going to buy one tomorrow. I have one picked out.
Nice.
You want to see it? Let me get the...
Yes.
I actually have three picked out that I'm going to build in order. So I have a cheaper one that I'm going to start with. Hold on, let me get the Skype chat. There we go. So first, that's the cheaper one that I'm just going to try. This isn't going to be my entry into our competition, which, by the way, is official. The other podcast said, hell yeah, we're down.
Oh god!
Okay. So that first one I'm gonna make just to feel it out and see what I'm doing.
Nice.
The second one, and the first one's like got this like it's got cool like chromed gold accents, but it's a generally cool looking Gundam. I think what is it? Gundam Unicorn Unit 02 Banshee Norn Destroy Mode. I don't know. I don't fucking know. The second one, the one that I'm gonna do for the competition, is just a Canon TriStar Clear version. The body is like a translucent blue clear. It's a blue clear, like translucent body. And I am going to put fucking LEDs in it and it's going to look sick because he's going to be translucent and it's going to look fucking balls out cool. And the last one's like $40. So I'm going to save that until I kind of know what I'm doing, but it is bling as fuck and I love it. It is like 90% chromed gold. And so awesome.
Oh, cool.
I cannot wait.
I'm going to lose.
Why?
Because you're putting lights in yours.
You can put lights in yours. It's fine. It's obviously not against the rules. I'm doing it.
I need to get the one from Gundam Wing that the Chinese guy flew, where one arm is a dragon.
Oh, yeah, that's the... David sent me a link to that one, though. It looked cool, but it wasn't my... wasn't something I was going for. It's not my
Endless
flavor.
Waltz. Yeah, Endless Waltz was, like, part of my childhood, so I think the first few things I'm going to build will be for that.
See, that's the thing. I have no connection to these Gundams at all. I'm just picking the ones that I think look neat.
That's a good way to go. I mean... The shiny one is really cool, too. It's so shiny.
It's so shiny. I feel like putting a light, like, just shining up at it and making it sparkle, I think that'd be sick, too. I'm gonna win this by the power of lights. But yeah, our competition is official. I think we're gonna finish up mid-September, because I'm gonna wait for David to come back. And give you time to build it and think about how you want to customize it or whatever you want to do with yours. If you want to at all, maybe you just want to touch it up and give it that like real effect. Okay. I don't know.
So yeah, I will start on mine. I don't know if Wing Gundam Zero is going to be my official entry.
Yeah, I mean, nothing wrong with making one because you like it and then making one to try and win. Like, that's what I'm going to do. I'm making one because I think it looks cool and I want to try it. And then the second one is the one that I'm gonna kit the fuck out.
Like, I feel confident in my ability to put together models and paint them because when Grant was doing War Machine, I helped him a lot with that. So, like, I feel like I know what I'm doing there, except Gundams snap together. So it's going to be really different in terms of just, like, making them really clean because they're not metal, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's stuff you can do with it. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what it is. I remember when I was younger, like high school and younger, I would make models out of model kits. But it would be, like, fucking spaceships. Like, I had a really cool Voyager model and a couple good X-Wing models. Just stuff like that. But that's not really, that's not the same thing. And I don't remember most of that.
Yeah, I think, an easy and good way to go is, like, the beat-up ones. Because it's really...
The battle damage kind of stuff?
Yeah, that sort of stuff is fairly easy to paint.
You know what I actually kind of thought about doing? Would be finding one that I didn't like that much, really. And then taking it and giving it some serious battle damage. Like, find one... Just one that I didn't like. One that I wouldn't mind beating up. And, like, melt part of it a little bit. Or cut off the arm before it actually ends. And get, like, a bundle of small gauge wires. And just kind of shove them in there. And maybe put, like, a light in there behind it. So it looks like it's, like, optical wiring that got cut off. I don't know.
That'd be good.
Like a little piece of, like, metal beam coming out. I don't know. But that's a way higher level of detail than I think I'm ready for as a beginner Gundam builder.
Yeah, it's... Model building is fun. It's just, like... I don't know. To make it look really good, it's tough.
Yeah, you need a lot of patience and a really steady hand, and I have neither of those things. I just don't. Well, on our Patreon page, patreon.com/welcometocomics, somebody sent us some feedback. We heard from Superfan Ray. He was saying, I was wondering if there were any plans to do more introduction episodes like you did for conventions. He says it would be cool to hear a breakdown of a famous comic character, writer/artist, or even more on the different aspects of comic fandom. And I think that's a good idea. Our like how-to convention episode was pretty well received, actually.
Oh, cool. I'd be down for doing that.
Yeah, we'll have to come up with some ideas. I've actually been rolling around with the idea of doing some interviews too, kind of starting out small and then building up from there. Maybe just like some local commissionable artists. There's an artist that I commissioned for, well, I initiated a commission and ended up canceling it because when we found out we were having a girl, we ditched our boy. If we had a boy, we were going to name him Iroh, as in Avatar Iroh. And I found somebody who's really, really good avatar art, and I commissioned her to do it, and she lives locally. So maybe I'll reach out to her and see if she wants to do an episode about how to approach an artist for commissions, how to do all that kind of different stuff.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
And just talk to somebody who's trying to live as an artist. Like, I know that's tough. And like, what you can do to show that you appreciate their work past just buying some, especially if you don't have that much money. I don't know. Stuff like that. Yeah. Find some local people.
I know you and David have cosplayed before.
Hell yeah.
And maybe we could do an episode about that, like how to get into it without breaking the bank. And
yeah, that's a good idea. We can have on the podcast I was mentioning earlier that we're doing this competition with Super Sugoi Cast. The Justin, one of the male co-host of the show, he cosplayed as General Obi-Wan Kenobi at It was just one that he threw together, but it looked really, really good. So it might be good to have that, like, throw it together experience as well.
Yeah, I think there's, like, a whole range of topics that we could do.
Yeah, we'll have to brainstorm some. And if you guys are listening, anybody listening has an idea of what we should do, send it in. You can go to our website, welcometocomics.com. There's a contact us with a mail form. You fill that out. It goes right to my straight-up personal inbox. So if you want me to read an email from you, fill out that form. It'll pop up on my phone the second you send it. There's also like Facebook, Twitter, all that kind of stuff. Any suggestions, send them in. We'll do them. Yep. Especially if you're a patron. Patreon.com/welcometocomics.
Nice plug.
Plug forever. Well, you ready to get into this week's comic?
I suppose I must be.
This week's comic.
Such enthusiasm. This week we read Dr. Fate, Countdown to Mystery. This was originally an 8-issue miniseries about Dr. Fate and Eclipso that was part of the Countdown to Final Crisis event, which we've read Final Crisis, I think, but not the Countdown to. Have we even read Final Crisis?
I don't feel like we did.
I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. It was Grant Morrison. I try to block it out from my mind. But anyway, this, we picked this one, like, Doctor Strange we picked because it was the best, straight up, the best Doctor Strange story. We picked this one because this is the only Doctor Fate trade paperback I have ever found. I did tons of searching, and there's singles, there's good runs of him on JSA, but this is his only run that was collected in his singles, which makes me feel bad because there's a miniseries that came out just a couple years before or after this, kind of around the same time, that was really, really good and was never collected. And there was also a really, really good run by Keith Giffen, I think it was, that apparently never got collected. And so it's so weird to me that this is the one that gets collected just because it's tied into the event. It's kind of disappointing. And boy, when you read it, you can tell it's an event comic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just the whole, like, the rules of magic are changing. And I'm like, okay. But that matters for everything outside this comic.
And not to it at all.
Yeah. Just kind of disappointing.
Yeah, I thought that they would go into his origin, like, on the helmet side a little more.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it was just, you know, bum fights all the way.
Yeah, because the original sorcerer who made the amulet and the helmet and I think the cape, there's three pieces that he made. The original Dr. Fate, his spirit was imbued in those items. And the next Dr. Fate after him, the one who was in the Justice Society pictures that Kent looks at, he could hear Nabu's voice, the original Dr. Fate, hear his voice whenever he wore the helm. So it was kind of like two sorcerers and both of their intelligence and energy being funneled through the magician, which it made for this really cool dynamic, and then you get here, and you kind of get hints of that, but not really. I don't know. It feels like they were taking that legacy aspect of Dr. Fate and trying to build it into Kent and Nelson, but Steve Gerber was slowly building a relationship between the gear and Kent, which, okay, you can make kind of a slow burn, but it's just like the helmet whispering to him.
It was mostly about him. The helmet was just kind of there. It might as well have been an inanimate object.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that let him know spells. I don't know. I think part of my issue with this is that we're taking a flawed person who has fucked up his life and he's about to go through some deep introspection, except it's our introduction to him, so we're thrown in media res of character development. And I feel like that's not good to put your audience in the middle of, because then they're just like, well, who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah. I mean, there's the old adage of put the reader in the middle of the action from the start and then let them fill in the blanks as you go. But when the blanks that you're filling in are fundamental character pieces, then it's just flashbacks that tell a story. And then every time that flashback or explanation of the past comes up, it kind of pulls you out of the story that you're reading. So, I mean, as much as I was kind of annoyed at, like, okay, you're kind of throwing shale at homeless people here occasionally is a little uncomfortable. I don't know, like, the whole homeless thing was a little uncomfortable quite a bit here. But, like, that all was still, like, him going around picking up trash was more interesting than the flashbacks.
I don't know. And I actually agree with that. Like, where he's, you know, trying to figure out, like, whether or not he wants to drink. I thought that was more interesting because we saw him, you know, kind of take his life apart and be drunk and then sober up a little and then go back to being drunk. So it felt like there was some movement with who he was as a person.
Yeah.
I feel like the thing is when you start in the middle of the action, it allows you to see where a person is. And then you go back to the beginning, you see where they were and like how they got there. And it's more of showing you that progression. Whereas here, we're just told, okay, he's engaging in bum fights now, and he has all this mental anguish, and then it throws us back, and it's like, here's more mental anguish, and there's not growth. It's not... It doesn't tell us anything new about him.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, and I think the sticking point is that it wasn't organic.
Yeah.
You know? Like, okay, you mentioned the bum fights. I want to just say, maybe I'm too PC, but when I first started, like, this first page of this, I was immediately on my guard. I was like, oh, bum fights, I don't know about this. And I obviously it's a cast in a negative light, but my perception of bum fights is it's this thing that happened in a dark corner of the internet for, like, 4 months that pretty much nobody really ever watched, but popular news media picked up on it and made a big story out of it, and then it just kind of just, like, it feels like it was this little thing that was made into this huge thing and just keeps getting perpetuated in media in places. So I was immediately on guard when we saw the bum fights, like, I don't know about this. And then after that, it started working better. It was like, okay, the bum fight was just an excuse to get him in the dumpster and to show that, yes, one of these homeless people is who we're going to be following. And, like, I'm okay following a homeless person on a story. I'm not uncomfortable with that. And honestly, I think it's good to show both sides of these things. Like the motel owner that quote unquote hires him for half of minimum wage, right? Like, it's interesting how Steve Gerber was able to show both sides of that. Like, yes, on the one hand, Kent Nelson is appreciative that he has a home. He was able to buy clean clothes. He was able to take a fucking shower, and he's making money. Those are all great things. But you're paying him less than minimum wage, and the guy is a dick.
So, you know? Like, what kind of...
There's complexity gets put in there in an interesting way.
I thought one of the better things that was done was the other bum he was fighting. You know, he keeps saying, like, this is a person who is mentally ill.
Yeah.
Like, that person doesn't deserve what they have. They just need help. They're a human being. And that was good. But at the same time, I felt like there was this underlying thread of, like, oh, here's homeless people, but Kent Nelson isn't a normal homeless person. He's a better homeless person because he used to be a doctor. Yeah. And that was kind of like, so on the one hand, you can view it as, okay, this can happen to anybody.
Yeah.
But it was not sympathetic in that way, because it was like, well, he's a better homeless person, but he fucked up his life, so he deserves it now. This is his penance. So you have this kind of narrative thread, which is going to clearly lead you out of him being homeless. So he gets a better life because that's, you know, he's a doctor. He's smart. He's capable. He shouldn't be homeless. He's a main character. But on the other hand, you kind of have a more sympathetic view of, like, it's hard to get a job. His friend who beat him up is mentally ill and, you know, has impulse control issues.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, just the way it dealt with Kent Nelson
and
kind of weirded me out. It didn't bother me, but it weirded me out.
And honestly, his homelessness made for a really organic place for his depression to come from. Because his alcoholism that gets displayed here is tied directly to his depression, which he has been in since that kid died. Probably even a little bit before that.
Before, yeah.
Like, he is deeply, deeply depressed. And this helmet is the thing that will save him in spite of himself. And that story comes organically from the homelessness. But, I don't know. You're right. Well, and the whole backstory telling, it's artificial from the helmet when you could have done it organically while he was drunk. He could have told it to Inza while he was drunk.
So, I think we often run into comics that deal with mental illness in very stereotyped ways, but a thing that I actually noticed here was yes, he was depressed, but it was like the most extreme iteration that someone could think of, because if you think about it, so he's depressed and he cheats on his wife. Okay, that's something people do. His wife leaves him and then he starts, I think, drinking heavily and failing at work. Okay, that happens to people. But then when he fails at work, it results in the death of his client and like 13 other people and the injury of 9 more. And a malpractice lawsuit, and then it ends in bum fights. And I don't know, I feel like they had to take it, like, this isn't just depression, this is like, ruin your life, set you in a dumpster level depression, which seemed really, I mean, narratively, you need something to drive the character there, but it was a little wacky to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know, like, my problem here is just, I think it's trying to balance, like, real problems people have with not just superhero unrealistic expectations, like, okay, he has a magical helmet, like, of course he won't in real life, but also just the way he acts and the spiral that he went down was, like, all out wacky.
I mean, I'm nitpicking when I do this, but because I almost went into psychiatry, I can tell you, this man must have had the worst, cheapest possible malpractice insurance he could have possibly bought.
Yes.
I mean, now, I know. That's so nitpicking, and there's a million ways you could write that off to, like, he was already depressed, so he might have not even wanted to get into the legal battle. He might have just paid off all of the lawsuits, just settle, fuck it. But, I mean, that's also what malpractice insurance is for. And the thing with the snowball story that they tell is you can't pinpoint where he gave up. Like, did he give up when he was in the dumpster? Did he give up after the malpractice suits, before he was on the street? Did he give up during the lawsuit proceedings? Did he give up when the people died? Like, where did he give up? Failing at work is something people do and they come out of it. Did he give up when he cheated on his wife? Is that the moment he gave up? Like, there's this slide, and I get that there's something realistic about just sliding into a cascade of problems in a way that you can't control. I get that there's realism in that, but in terms of storytelling, I need to know when Kent Nelson decided he was okay being homeless. Because...
Yeah.
He has... Okay. Yes, he probably cannot do psychiatry again in his life. But the man has at least a master's degree and some other postgraduate work if he's a psychologist. If he was a psychiatrist, he has to have at least an MD or PhD. This guy is smart enough to do another thing in his life. Well, and I say that from a little bit of a place of hubris. We live in Silicon Valley. This area has one of the worst homelessness problems in the country because there are people like who were engineers living here and then their specialty got out of date. Like, oh, I was an amazing COBOL programmer. Okay. Go back to the early aughts, early 2000s. You know, like, you're obsolete. There's no need for you here. And we can pay somebody half of what we pay you if you want to learn a new code. So there are tons of homeless people here who are super educated and super capable. But rent is, this is one of the hardest places in the entire country to live and pay rent. This is more expensive than New York fucking city. And, like, I get that just having a degree doesn't mean for sure you're going to have a job, but Kent Nelson doesn't seem like he's so far removed.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, it's kind of implied he has an alcohol problem, but it doesn't seem like he's actually alcoholic.
Yeah, until, like, we see him fall out of the sky. Then it's like, okay, you have a problem.
Yeah, but he was drunk, right? Like, I can also see a teenage boy doing that. Like, yeah. I don't it wasn't framed as addiction. And this is what gets me. It almost seems like he was just like, woe is me, I am homeless and getting beat up on the street and drunk. But it...
Well, that's the thing. It's hard to label alcoholism. Alcoholism, it's an addiction if it interferes with your normal daily life. But if you're homeless and barely have a job, what constitutes interfering with your normal daily life?
Yeah.
You know? And it's not until the point where he drinks so much he blacks out and forgets to do his job for a couple days. At that point, you can say he has an alcohol problem. You can say he's an alcoholic. But that's after he said, fall off the wagon for a night, what's it gonna hurt? Two nights, what's it gonna hurt? A week, what's it gonna hurt? Like, at that point, then there's the problem. I don't know. I actually thought when he went into drinking was some of the best storytelling for him.
I agree. And I will say, I think I came off as unsympathetic, because what I mean is, when we're told his backstory, we don't see him having a problem with alcohol. We see him, like, once at a bar, I think.
Yeah.
But, like, it's later when he's homeless that he starts drinking, and it just seems incidental. It doesn't seem like it's tied into his character as a struggle.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you have a bad like day, he's you just have a beer.
Choosing, yeah, it seems like he's choosing to do it instead of fighting with it, which maybe made it lack more interest. And it's not that I'm unsympathetic necessarily to what happened to him. It just seems like from his backstory, we see him kind of haplessly slide into it. Like, the state we find him in at the start of this trade. But then he's kind of like, ooh, everything's sad, like, for the whole trade.
Yeah.
And that's what, I don't know, like, it doesn't seem like he's fighting anything but his own apathy, which is, in a lot of ways, what depression is. But...
Yeah, but I think what you're getting... Okay, so earlier I said, storytelling-wise, I want to know why he gave up. And I think I think you just articulated why I want to know. Did he give up and then start drinking? Or did he drink and then give up? Like, it matters storytelling-wise, because when he forgives himself or redeems his mistake from the moment that made him give up, that's when we know, as a reader, he's okay. So if he gave up when he started hitting the bottle, that scene at the bar when he became an alcoholic and all of that mess, if that's the moment he gave up, then later on, when we see him choose to sober up, that's when we see him working towards redemption. But if the moment was when he cheated on his wife, then he needs to get over that. You know?
Yeah.
Like, that's the problem with the slide, is that now Kent Nelson can't redeem himself through any single act. Kent Nelson has to redeem cheating on his wife, destroying his home, drinking, killing that boy, killing the people, injuring the people, the lawsuits, the losing his livelihood. He has to redeem a massive list of things that are pretty unrealistic expectations. I don't know about you, Jen, but when I have a really bad fuck-up day, like, when I just seem to be screwing everything up, I'm happy to go to sleep when I've fixed one or two things. I don't need to fix all of them.
That's fair. You know, I think part of it, too, is I know, like, I brought up the realism thing, but the more I try to wrap my head around this, I'm realizing we're talking about realism in terms of depression, and I think the comic does do a good job in that depression is something that doesn't have necessarily a trigger point or, you know, the part where you go down the spiral, and it is kind of a hapless thing that does happen to people without their consent or control. But I don't know if realism and narrative work together that well in this kind of comic. And I think that's maybe where the problem lies, because it might be entirely realistic that this just kind of happens to him and there is no real, like, turning point. But that doesn't make for an interesting story. And I think that's my problem with it. It's that I, because this is a Cape comic, have a certain narrative expectation of how a plot should unfold and how a character should develop. And there's a lot of room within that for various things to happen. But at the same time, I expect certain, I guess you could almost say, like, waypoints or flags for, like, this is when this happened, and this is when this character developed this way. When reading comics, I do expect narrative cues, and I don't think this provided them as clearly as some of the other things that we read.
Yep. You can drop the mic now. Well, okay. So then, let's keep on the same thing then about his story and when I say keep on the same thing, I'm talking about what I was talking about. I'm just going to bring it back to me. So, okay. This comic, Steve Gerber died. The author of this comic died before he could finish. That's why the last issue has four different endings. And talking about, Kent Nelson and his trajectory as a character, there's four different endings, right? The first, Adam Beechin, some random dude comes out of nowhere and clubs Nagal to death with a pipe and then leaves. And that's it. And there's not really resolution for Kent Nelson there. There's just resolution of storyline. The next one is Mark Evanier, where apparently the Nagal is the lord of the self-despised. So all Kent Nelson has to do to get away is to forgive himself a little bit. I think that was the Mark Evanier one. The next one is Mark Waid, when fate, all like same kind of thing, defeats Nagal by pulling himself out of the gutter. But in Mark Waid's, he there's a full page spread, or a splash page. I don't know which it's called. One page, full page. Wall of text, pretty much, with a dude I didn't recognize. And,
that was one of his patients from very early on.
Ah, okay, that makes sense. And then the patient teaches him to makes Kent Nelson realize the depths of the despair and depression that he's in. And Fate, upon realizing that about himself, stops going around, he stops trying to analyze the other, looks upon himself in a moment of introspection, and in that moment has the power to defeat Nagal. Right? I think so. And the last one is Gail Simone, which is ridiculous as fuck. And Gail Simone's Dr. Fate convinces Nagal that Nagal just needs counseling. And then they escape, and Inza and Maddie are swinging on swings in space. And
so
it was okay.
I get it, but I also barfed a little.
No, yeah, at a certain point, you're like, okay, Gail's just fuck it.
Yeah, I love Gail Simone, but that was not. I get it. It was just not for Jen. That's all.
That ending is 100% Gail Simone's style.
Mm-hmm.
And if Gail Simone had written all eight issues of this, she would have done it in a tone that would have made that ending work. But the first seven issues had nowhere near this tone. This ending is just ridiculous and funny and fun. And you just have to take it for that and barf a little and move on.
Yeah.
But so then, thinking of it in what we've been talking about in terms of the trajectory of Dr. Fate and how he's been on this slide into bum fighting, apparently. Of these four endings, I think Mark Waid's is the one that I like the most because it takes the entire spectrum of Kent Nelson's problems for what they are and says, I have a problem. And now I know it, and I'm going to stop being a dick about it, basically. Whereas the other three, Mark Evanier comes the closest, but I don't know.
You know, for me, I actually put a note under one of them saying the power of just because, and that actually belongs under the Mark Evanier one, because I think that is the one where Dr. Fate just realizes, like, if people rebel against you, you can't do anything. Yeah. And that just seemed very okay.
Well, I think it was in that one, Nagal was the Lord of the Self-Despised, so all Dr. Fate had to do was hating himself.
Yeah. But that seemed very... I think when you get to the level of self-loathing where you are really just punishing yourself by engaging in the kind of behavior that Nelson was, it's not as easy as being like, oh, I need to just stop hating myself.
Well, and I didn't like this. I didn't like Vanier's solution because Steve Gerber already covered that in the run when Kent Nelson had a vision and went into Kent Nelson followed No Face Huckleberry Finn down some river into this castle and met the king and the queen and the whipping boy. And the whipping boy was Kent Nelson, and the king and the queen were his visions of guilt beating himself up. Kent Nelson already confronted his self-loathing.
And the king was like, and you know, this isn't, it's not fixed. This is just the start. So it just seems
so then too easy. Later on when it comes back and it's just like, oh, all I need to do is forgive myself. Fine. I forgive myself. You're beaten. It's kind of, and it's probably because each one of these writers only got a quarter of an issue to write their thing, but it felt way more Deus Ex Machina, even though it was kind of the same ending as Mark Waid.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was going for a more hopeful bent, you know, but it didn't resonate. I liked Adam Beechin's one, because it was just as arbitrary as some of the other stuff we saw, and I feel like that's kind of, that fit for me in the world that I saw in this comic, where bad, arbitrary things happen to people for no reason.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, that's a theme in this comic. Yeah, like, the world sucks.
The imps say that repeatedly.
And something, like, sometimes that works out for you, and sometimes it doesn't, and in this case...
And when Maddie gets the helmet, she gets the same story. So it's not just Kent Nelson who sees the world as suffering. It's the people in the spirit world describe the world as suffering.
Man, do we want to talk about Maddie and her helmet issues for a bit? Because, goodness. I didn't realize that she was supposed to be evil right until then. That one actually, well, I don't even know if evil, but certainly selfish. It caught me off guard. I thought she was going to be like one of the good guy allies.
Yeah, I thought she was going to be like a helper. I don't know.
Yeah, or like a guiding, like, I don't know, the oracle to his Batman or something.
Like a Wong.
Yeah, like Wong, but he has no Wong. Which, that's probably his problem.
Yeah.
But man, when she put on the helmet and saw the angels, and then they started spitting on her, that was great. That was
really funny.
It wasn't just funny. It like really surprised me. I thought that was an interesting turning point, and it described like the theme very well.
Yeah, like the really just because you studied books, you think you fucking deserve this? No, that's not how the magical world in DC works. You don't deserve things. Things come to you by fate, or they don't. You don't deserve things here. If you think you deserve something, the thing you deserve is a slap in the fucking face. And that, yeah, that spit really got that message across real fast. And then, didn't one of the angels' head explode?
Yes, just, and then
boom, blood all over her.
I think that's where Imp came from. He, like, exploded out of that angel or something. I mean, that was a good disguise.
Yeah, it's exactly what she wanted to see.
Yeah. Oh, man, that was... Her spirit journey was really weird. Especially, like, Imp just leaves her in the desert in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
Right? Like
I don't know what that symbolism was, but sure.
It's strange. Man, there was a lot of stuff in this comic that I could not wrap my head around. I'm gonna, like, randomly segue into yet another thing.
Cool.
The freaking Inza's comic got to read.
Yeah, that seemed like such an aside. I have no idea.
I think it was supposed to be so Nelson could show off his psychiatric skills so we know that he's a real doctor. But I don't know if I wanted to read that. It was like Harlequin romance in not the good way.
Well, and I genuinely think this is an example of us being robbed of the real ending. Because I don't think that would have been included simply to show off Kent Nelson's psychiatric skills. Killface?
Killface, I think, yeah. Killhead?
Killhead? Yeah, I think you're right. I think it was Killhead. I think Killhead was going to come back in issue 8. I think Inza was going to transform into Killhead or something from the goo. There was Inza's, of all of the people in this, in that fourth story, Inza's storyline is the one that's completely left neglected. Mm-hmm. None of the four people who ended the story included Inza in any significant way. And I refuse to believe that Inza is the Dr. Fate version of a woman in a refrigerator. Like, she died, and that happened to be while Kent Nelson was sobering up, and Kent Nelson, after that, used Inza as an excuse to redouble his efforts to fight Nagal. And I refuse to believe that that's all that was, because if that's all that was, there's no reason to show us the comic.
Yeah.
There's no reason to do that. If that's all Inza was. So Inza, I'm certain, was going to matter in the end. And Killhead was going to matter. And we unfortunately didn't get that.
Yeah, and I would have liked to see a real resolution. Because she was an interesting character. I think she had the most personality out of everyone.
Yeah.
But man, her comic was...
bad
thing. It was a thing, and I wish that there was resolution to that, definitely, because I think I wouldn't be sitting here saying that.
This is the problem, listeners. If you're an aspiring comic book writer or comic book artist, I know people tell you draw what you know and write what you know. Don't write about yourself. I don't know. I've never picked up a book that was written by a writer where the main character was an author that I enjoyed. I have never found one. And I mean, I don't know. It just always seems to be this place that you don't want to go. Because I liked Inza up until that moment. And then as soon as she said, oh yeah, I'm a comic book artist and this is my thing. And I'm like, okay. Now we're getting into a meta secondary level where things are supposed to matter and you're pulling... like, Inza was introduced in this story in a really, really awesome way. She immediately made herself a person that I like. Being like, that guy just fell out of the sky in the fucking pond. You're gonna help? No, you? What about... like, she turned... she didn't just say, is anybody going to help but me? And look around. She, if you notice, she turned to... the guys, or the people who looked bigger and more fit than her, and was like, are you gonna help? Fine, fuck it, I guess I have to do it. And then she jumps in. It's not because she wasn't going to help. It's because she was looking for somebody to help her help. Somebody more fit than her to help her help. And she ended up just saying, fuck it, I'm not gonna be victim to this bystander effect. I'm gonna jump in and save this asshole. And that is a striking introduction for a character, and it worked really, really well. And even when she was cleaning him off, I liked her. And then, I don't know, then it just got weird.
Yeah, she was cool. Like, she had a lot of personality and was generally, like, a positive character, right? She had the good hero-y traits. Like, she was brave and assertive and kind. And then... there's, like, the weird romance in her comic that, I don't know, Like, it was just, you know, that's the thing, like, the random theme of romance and seduction, where it's like, he has to seduce her, and, like, they have to get it on, but he can't rape her. Like, where did that come from? Yeah, why? That why? That is so random.
I didn't even want to touch that with a 10-foot pole.
I feel like it took up almost an entirety of an issue, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Out of 8, I feel like that needs to be
a significant chunk.
Someone needs to say something. Like, that's all.
David, where are you?
Yeah.
Maybe I don't David know what could to have found a reason.
Yeah, he would have been like pointing out the thing, the connection that we're missing here.
Yes.
Anyway.
Well, you want to rate this?
Yeah.
Okay, you can go first then.
Okay. I'm going to give it a 2.5. I feel terrible shitting all over this. It wasn't bad. It engaged me the whole time, and I kept reading. It's not like I slogged through it. I just couldn't engage with Kent Nelson at all as a character. It's not so much that I didn't have any interest. It's that he was unlikable in a way that didn't sway me strongly emotionally. Like, I didn't hate him, so it wasn't the sign of, like, a good villain or anything, but at the same time, I was kind of like, eh, you shouldn't be Dr. Fate, but I guess I don't care if you are, that's cool. I thought Inza was the most likable character, and then she disappeared after one issue, so that was unfortunate. I don't know, I thought the art was pretty good. I enjoyed it. Like, it had some really nice, like, big, you know, full-page spreads, and, like, the colors were bright in a way that I thought was really, I don't know, it was pretty, and it was flashy in a way that interested me, but at the same time, it wasn't enough to make me feel like this was good. I don't know. This is hard. I don't like rating comics by shitting all over them, but an average, I guess, is not shitting all over it. I feel like I was exceptionally mean in my review today, and I don't like that. But it wasn't for me. I'll put it that way. I think someone else might enjoy this. The art was good. I just didn't care about the main character. So 2.5.
Yeah, I'm going to be right there with you with the 2.5. I mean, I did want to say, we didn't talk about the art much, but I really did like it. I think Justiniano and Walden Wong did a really good job of creating a world where Vegas seemed real and hell seemed real. Mm-hmm. And the coloring was a lot of good decisions because Vegas was bright and colorful, and hell had a lot of subdued colors and tones and a lot of dark, deep reds and deep blues. So that when Kent Nelson transformed into Dr. Fate and put on the blue and gold, you can tell he doesn't wear blue and gold for shigs. He is bright and stands out on the page when he gets into that armor, that costume, while he's in Nagal's realm. He is, when you talk about superheroes as being a symbol, when he's in that realm and he's done the fuck up, he is so much more brilliantly bright and visual than everything else there. He is a symbol for the order that should happen in this magical universe. So, like, I really appreciated those aspects of the art. And the action moved really well, and there was good acting, and face work was good, and all that kind of stuff. But I think what I really appreciated was that color work, almost more than anything else. But yeah, in terms of story, you're right, we shat on it a lot. And I don't know. He was okay. This isn't the Dr. Fate I know, and I'm okay with that. It doesn't have to be. And I know Kent Nelson, and I kind of like Kent Nelson now, and Kent Nelson is fine. And I genuinely like the idea of a homeless superhero. I think it would be interesting. But I think you're right, Jen. I think Kent Nelson is too good to be homeless. So he's going to, within like a week, move into that tower in Salem, Massachusetts, and not be homeless anymore. And it takes all of the adversity that exists for Kent Nelson in this comic are all the things that give him texture as a character. And you know, within a week of this man's life, all of that texture and adversity is just going to be taken away. And all he's going to have left is his wife and daughter. And I'm sure he's going to, once he's Dr. Fay, he's going to reach out to his daughter, I'm sure. Or there's going to be some story, oh, no, I don't want to put her in danger, some bullshit like that. So yeah, 2.5, just because I feel like it was a lot of missed opportunity all over. Probably mostly because it opened up with a bum fight and just immediately put me on guard because bum fight. So yeah, 2.5. And we're not going to do quotes this week, listeners. I know normally we do quotes after we raid or we play trivia or some other game. We're not going to do a game because David isn't here. And we're also not going to do a game next week because next week Jen is gone and David is gone. So instead of skipping a week or having it be just me, I'm going to bring on a very, very special guest host, my wife. And we're going to read Thor, Goddess of Thunder, the brand new run from last year when Thor is reincarnated as a woman. It's the first 5 issues of that run by Jason Aaron and Russell Dauterman. And I'm really excited for this. My wife reads comics every once in a while, and I talk about making her read stuff, but I'm going to force her to, and we're going to talk about it on the show, and it'll be an interesting conversation, and I can't wait to do it. And then after that, we're going to do some Gotham City stuff and all kinds of things. But if you want to know what we're doing for that Gotham City run, and maybe even what we have coming up after that, go to our website, welcometocomics.com. On the left, click on the button, says Future Shows. You can see what we've got coming up. There's a button that says Past Shows. That'll take you to all of our 225 previous episodes. 225. Hey, so Jen, let me ask you, did you think, who did you find more interesting as a master sorcerer? Not the character Kent Nelson or the character, what was Doctor Strange's name? Stephen Strange. Not Stephen Strange or Kent Nelson, but the Sorcerer Supreme in the Marvel Universe, or Dr. Fate, who is just whoever happens to be wearing the helmet?
That's a tough question, simply because in this comic we did not get to see much of Dr. Fate being Dr. Fate. True. With my knowledge of both outside of what we've read this week and last, I will say Dr. Fate.
Dr. Fate, we read him before in Justice League International. He was in that.
Yes.
He was a primary character in that.
And he's very interesting. I think the mystery and mysticism surrounding his character are fascinating. But I thought that Sorcerer Supreme from last week definitely trumps this iteration of Dr. Fate just in terms of the lore around him and his magical power.
Yeah. I have to agree. I've always really liked Dr. Fate, but last week seeing Dr. Strange turn Hitler's gun into fireflies.
Yeah.
I've never seen Dr. Fate do something like that, and that was funny and cute and cool all at the same time. So just between these two, I'm also going to have to give it to Dr. Strange. Yeah. Anyway, that wraps up our Doctor. Two episodes. That's what I named the two issue thing. Doctor. That wraps that up. Next week, I already mentioned Thor, Goddess of Thunder. So come back next week and have a listen with us. Until then, everybody, goodbye.
Goodbye.